Welcome to today's sixth CEU seminar, entitled Beyond the Medical Model, Positive Psychology, Acceptance and Commitment Therapy, and Strengths-Focused Approaches. I'll be your presenter for today's seminar, and my name's Michelle Sparks. I'm the owner and director here at River of Life Professional Counseling in suburban Columbus, Ohio. This seminar has been pre-approved by the State of Ohio Counselor, Social Worker, and Marriage and Family Therapist Board. For social workers, licensed independent social workers, and supervising social workers in Ohio, as well as licensed professional counselors, licensed professional clinical counselors, and supervising counselors in Ohio. This topic is dear to me because all too often in grad school, we're taught that the way to go is the medical model, that some doctors, some people in the APA have gotten together and decided what the right efficacious ways of approaching treatment are. And it is important that we know these and that we're aware of them because it is of value to make sure that what we're doing with our clients is proven over time, that the literature, the research, and the practice of psychotherapy does support the types of techniques that we're using. So we want to make sure that we are using things that have been substantiated to actually make a difference. We also want to make sure, especially when we're dealing with billing sources, such as insurance companies and documentation, that we're able to show that what we're doing is what makes a difference, that there's a clinically significant reason for what we're doing, that we're not just another ear to listen or another person like a friend for our clients to talk to, that we're offering something that is clinically significant. But the problem is that there are some issues with the medical model, and these issues can be overcome by things like the positive psychology approach, by things like ACT, which is an abbreviation for acceptance and commitment therapy, and approaches like the strengths-focused approaches. So today my hope is providing another way or another approach of looking at things, so it's not just a matter of what we've always done or business as usual, that we're looking at what would be most beneficial for our clients. And sometimes having things like these other alternative approaches that I'll be talking about today really can bring more of a sense of hope to our clients. So I know at least how I was trained in my master's and post-master's counseling training was very much this medical model. It was very focused on the presenting concerns of a client. It was focused on hearing about the suffering and the narrative of what had brought this client into counseling. So diagnostic labels with the medical model were of utmost importance. Mainly because, again, we're trying to substantiate insurance billings. We're trying to make sure that what we're doing meets the DSM criteria and the ICD medical criteria. There is some prejudice in the medical model towards that worldview. And the fact is, when you look at the other seminars that I do on multicultural counseling, that much of the world doesn't necessarily buy into this medical model. When we look at what people think of in terms of what contributes to disease or wellness, that there's many people in the world that have other explanations or narratives besides biology, besides medicine, and besides what our medical model would suggest. Another problem with the medical model is we're looking at statistics. We're looking at deviation from norms. We're looking at measurements saying, oh, if most people are a certain way, then that is the quote-unquote norm. we're assuming that the more a group of people do a certain thing, that's the way it should be. But is that necessarily the best approach? Because again, if we're trying to be multiculturally competent on any dimension of culture, which is defined as the way we do anything, we really need to not just look at one narrow-minded norm. Medical model really emphasizes this concept of mental illness. And many authors out there would suggest that it may not necessarily be very optimistic for our clients to have such a heavy focus on illness. Actually, in one sense, it may not be very freeing and empowering to them to move beyond an illness model. I remember, for example, in grad school, the idea of secondary gain being taught to us. You might think of in different contexts that you may have worked in mental health agencies or in the field, where people have seemed to benefit from their mental illness. Maybe they've gotten extra attention or time. Maybe they've gotten special benefits. So it's really made a priority to them being mentally ill. I remember, for example, working at an inpatient psychiatric hospital where some people benefited from being mentally ill so that they would get free food, free housing, and connected to services that otherwise they were having difficulty getting connected to. Medical model emphasizes this disease concept and looking at what's wrong. It really places an overemphasis on the problem-based narratives of our clients. But there is an alternative. One of the alternatives that I love to consider and has been just a breath of fresh air for me when I've studied for this seminar was the idea of what's called positive psychology. As an alternative to the medical model, which is a suffering-focused, problem-focused model, positive psychology, by the very nature of its name, is quote-unquote positive. It's looking at strengths. It's looking at values. It's looking at what the client may already be doing or is precious to that client and motivating to that person. Instead of diagnostic labels of the medical model, positive psychology offers individualized meanings. This can mean a lot to a client, knowing that his or her narrative is personally considered valuable, that we're taking time to hear that narrative from where that client's coming from. So therefore, the personal narratives, when we use positive psychology, are looked at in the context of the client. In addition, with positive psychology, choices and behaviors can be seen as useful in light of values and beliefs of the client. What's also empowering is rather than the focus on mental illness of the medical model, positive psychology instead offers an idea of focus on mental wellness. Now that may be as a strengths-based solution-focused approach would offer mental wellness in terms of useful behavior and choices that have already occurred or skills that seem to counteract diagnoses like depression or anxiety. Positive psychology also is empowering because it calls the client essentially to an active participation in their life. This highlights the partnership nature of the therapeutic alliance. This basically highlights also that the client is an active participant in his or her work towards healing. And that the solution isn't necessarily diagnosing things, picking apart problem narratives, and questioning what's wrong, but instead, with positive psychology, the solution is in looking at the symbolisms behind why our clients do what they do. The core tenets of positive psychology include terms like acceptance, diffusion, mindfulness, self as context, values, and committed action. Let me go through these to make sure we all have the same foundation about what these mean, because you're going to hear these consistently across the literature if you study positive psychology and acceptance and commitment therapy. Acceptance, as differentiated from the medical model, is basically an allowing of the sensations, feelings, urges, and desires to come and go. So let's take, for example, an anxious client who is tired of feeling panicked, who has this all-or-nothing fight, flight, or freeze reaction, who's just trying to get past the panic symptoms. That person, according to the medical model, might be diagnosed with panic disorder, a trauma disorder, or a generalized anxiety disorder. That, again, is very problem-focused. However, if a positive psychology approach was used, on the other hand, that client could see anxiety as something that's acknowledged and as a means of, quote, riding the waves of life, the ups and downs, the ebbs and flows of life. Basically, it's a means of normalizing what just happens in our day-to-day human life. We can almost like see anxiety as if it's personified passing through. It's not necessarily some awful thing, some diagnosis, some negative label put on us, but rather it's a part of life that's just gone a bit awry that we need to learn to manage through. So, like I said, one of the core tenets of positive psychology is that of acceptance. Another one is diffusion. Learning how to distance from unhelpful, painful thoughts, memories, and beliefs. What's refreshing to many of my clients that I've been working with lately is this alternative idea of being a third-party observer. So basically, sort of looking at their life outside themselves. I think of, for example, a client of mine who has had some pretty deep relationship wounds and dealing with trust, mistrust, what his life goals are, what he'd like to happen in terms of relationships versus if he thinks it may or may not happen. So his initial go-to reaction has always been of trying to quickly find out if this certain relationship, the dating relationship he's in, is going to work out or not. This causes a lot of angst and stress for him because he's trying to read between the lines of another person's behavior, of his behavior, what quote-unquote should happen, what's supposed to happen, and really causes a lot of stress for him. What's been refreshing lately, however, is as we've used a positive psychology method, instead, he's looked at as a third-party observer. He's just able to hang out with someone he's dating and see how it goes. See sort of what information, as a third-party observer, he can collect and apply. There's not deep value judgments about how good of a guy he is in a relationship or how much of a failure he is. Or things like figuring out the success or the doom of a relationship. Thereby, the relationship becomes a whole lot less stressful for him. Another term you'll hear when we're talking about positive psychology is the idea of mindfulness. It's the idea of just being in the here and now. Instead of trying to scrutinize the past and what made you develop presenting concerns that you're coming to counseling with, or instead of trying to predict the future or get to the idealized approach. It's just a matter of being in the here and now, of increasing present moment awareness. An awareness without deep values, without picking things apart. Self as context is another phrase you'll hear. It's the idea of the existence within all of life and its meanings. So really taking seriously and desiring to hear the personalized narratives of our clients. For example, to hear what their values are. So let's say a client comes in with anger management issues. Instead of looking at, oh my gosh, are they bipolar? Do they have mood swings? What kind of chemical imbalance do they have? What family of origin issues do they have? What do we need to piece apart? I can hear that client's narrative and find out what's really motivating that man or woman. I can find out their sense of what's personally meaningful to them. What goals are important to them? What values do they believe in? For example, if I allow them to tell their story and really try to just evidence high levels of Rogers process variables, I can ultimately hear themes and their foundations of their personal meanings. Then I might say a summary statement about them wanting fairness in life or equality and feeling like things are not balanced in the way they would like, or they're not getting their fair share according to others. Then we can look at their operational definition of fairness and why this is an important value to the client. That client really will feel understood because, again, it's not me prescribing from without what a medical model, what statistic group of people would say is imposed on that person. But it's just hearing their narrative and walking alongside them in that narrative. The thing that also goes closely along with this idea of hearing a client's values is committed action. Action moving in direction of their values. Essentially, positive psychology would suggest that a useful treatment plan is one that supports and maintains the values of the client. Remember in grad school or years ago, maybe decades ago, we were told, oh, don't even talk about values. Well, now things are swinging to the other side of things. The fact of the matter is we all have values. And to deny those or sweep them under the rug actually can be seen as problematic. Instead, part of it is hearing and creating opportunity within the therapeutic alliance for that to open up. So basically we're looking at increasing openness and awareness. We're increasing forward movement with acceptance for the client's story. We're helping him or her observe in third person as opposed to scrutinizing things in the mind. Rashid and Seligman have been two of the names you'll hear a lot in terms of positive psychology. You might remember Martin Seligman from way back when in terms of the concept of learned helplessness. Remember he did those studies of people who would, when they were in a situation, or pets especially, where they heard noises or were trapped or a sound or a shock, that pet learned to shy away from a certain stimulus? Well, in recent years, what's been cool is that Martin Seligman's actually studied the idea of learned optimism. So positive psychology would suggest that we're trying to figure out what is the best or ideal way to use our mind. How can we make our actions constructive and useful? How are they meaningful? This phrase you'll hear in almost any book or research that you're going to pick up regarding positive psychology. The key question, if I were to summarize in terms of one sentence or core tenet, is what I am doing useful? Useful is defined as, does it create the life that I want to live? So that's a basic sentence you might even ask a client if you were using positive psychology. Oh, I hear that your approach to such and such issue that you're coming in for is to do A, B, and C. Is that helping you get closer to your stated goals and values? It sounds to me that you have an importance on the value of such and such. Tell me how you're living out that value. So you see, the more positive way that this positive psychology sets things up, it's looking at what the client would see as good or right, what works for him or her. What are the things that essentially would act as buffers against mental disorders? It's very strengths-based and counteracts weakness in an indirect way. It promotes what we'd consider a balanced life. One of the other things you'll see in the literature in terms of positive psychology is it looks at the names that clients give things. What labels do they put on things? What operational definitions? So that we can use much of the same language that a client uses. And by doing that, then we're just partnering and walking alongside them and helping to create tangible opportunities for them to facilitate committed actions towards things that are meaningful and useful for them. The assumption is that there is a natural movement within a person to grow towards their best self. The idea you may have heard of in terms of self-actualization. So we don't have to stress about it. We don't have to analyze it and compare it statistically to some norms, as a medical model would suggest. But it's more about learning to let things happen. It's not as much about intense inner processing as much as just allowing things to pass through. Some of the theorists have talked about comparing and contrasting the idea of being versus doing. And I find that the errors that clients make tend to be along the lines of trying to do more, faster, greater, bigger, harder. Let me try and put more effort in. And that's how some of our clients end up depressed and stressed or just giving up. But instead, there is an alternative that positive psychology would suggest. And that alternative is one of being, existing. So truth is defined as what functionally works and using the metaphor of the clients. There are some assumptions, then, behind this theory of positive psychology. Everyone has potential. What a really neat, positive way of approaching therapy. What an optimistic way to set up the therapeutic relationship. We could actually look at what goes right instead of what goes wrong. We can help a client build a healthy life and work environment. We can look at what contributes to the good of psychology and good of society. So the psychology behind the medical model is essentially a psychology of failure, picking apart what was wrong and why did it go wrong. And once you get into that, tell me about times when you're depressed. Talk to me about some examples about when you can't sleep at night. Tell me more about how nervous you feel. You see the tone that would give a client? Whereas the alternative with positive psychology is trying to find a psychology of success. Let's talk more about what works. Maybe you're coming in thinking it's hardly worked, but sometime it did. And maybe we can get it to increase the frequency of how much it works. So we're looking less about repairing weaknesses and more at building the frequency and the intensity of strengths that are already there. Often our clients forget to notice what's a strength. And if we can bring that to the surface, they may feel like things aren't as bad as they initially thought when they made the decision to come into counseling. We're moving away from prejudices and biases that are linked to diagnosis and categorization of people in the first place. There's forward movement towards what makes life worth living. Positive psychology, then, is defined as the academic study of what makes life worth living and what enables people and communities to thrive. This is fascinating because if you listen to my seminar in this same cycle about overcoming trauma, you realize that oftentimes our clients, when we use the medical model, look at how to survive. But there's a whole nother set of exciting literature out there that looks at thriving, that we can actually dialogue about the idea of being problem-free. We can focus on strengths and skills. Solution-focused approaches do this by asking what's called the miracle question. The idea, if you woke up tomorrow and the problem that you're saying you're coming to counseling for wasn't occurring anymore, life was better, things were solved, your wishes for the life you hope to lead actually came true, what would be happening? So we're facilitating a positive, problem-free narrative. The thing that positive psychology also does that's so exciting to a client is it reinforces the idea of mattering. Their narrative, their way of looking at things is important. The literature suggests that we have such a huge impact as the clinicians in our work on this concept of mattering. Everyone essentially deep down wants to know, who am I? Do I offer anything of value to this world? Would it make a difference if I wasn't here? And so positive psychology, by recognizing the values of a client, focuses on the concept of mattering. And ultimately what happens is it teaches resilience. Culture must be also included in this concept of positive psychology. Culture is a common heritage or set of beliefs, norms and values, or shared attributes. When I talk in the multicultural seminars I teach, I basically give what may initially sound like an overly simplistic definition of culture or competency. But culture basically is the way a group of people do something. It could be anything. It could be the music they listen to, the type of arts and crafts they do, the way they dress, the socioeconomic status, the values or beliefs they have on anything on the continuum. Just there's a multitude of things that could be considered culture. And we have all these different dimensions of culture co-occurring. This includes beliefs about sickness and wellness. Toward that end, one of the best questions we can even ask a client to help better understand them is, where does your hope come from? I think clients don't necessarily expect us to ask that question. It helps them pause and think and consider things in a different way. Keep in mind that there's people at different cultures around the world that may have different approaches. For example, take the dimension of individualistic versus collectivistic cultures. Some cultures may present with emphasis on a team or a community problem solving together. We pull together resources. No matter if there's poverty, no matter if there's limited access to education or certain resources, we pull together what we do have to help each other. An individualistic society, on the other hand, may look at the value in terms of someone having strong will to be a self-made person to pursue certain decisions. It's all in the way we hear and conceptualize our clients' outcomes. So what is the result of positive psychology? Well, what we see in the literature is that our clients can actually accomplish new things that they thought maybe they couldn't before. Their attachments in terms of interpersonal relationships can be more secure, which we know there's a whole literature surrounding that. There's more interest, curiosity, and wonder. They can feel happy as opposed to just avoiding pain. And remember, those two are not the same. Joy is not just avoiding pain. Avoiding pain is just trying to jump through a hoop. Avoiding pain is much of what the medical model focuses on. But positive psychology again, focuses instead on thriving. How do I not only get past the pain, but how do I proactively seek some other alternative that's consistent with my values and beliefs that will drive me to committed action? Towards that end, this has to do with what we call adaptive functioning. If you think of something like the Serenity Prayer, you hear that phrase of knowing the difference between what I can and can't control. So positive psychology would help someone towards focusing on the handful of things or the few things that they maybe can make a difference in, instead of picking apart all the things they feel helpless about. There are some ingredients in terms of a helper or a therapeutic person, a clinician, that would make a difference then in terms of positive psychology. What are some of these ingredients, so to speak, of the helper that would help someone to focus and progress more towards self-actualization? Well, Brewer, in a 2016 article, talks about things like integrity, energy, movement towards proactive goals. He also includes this idea of the therapist having a genuine interest in the good or the well-being of a client. So what we're doing is less perceived as a career or just a methodical scientific way of doing things, and more sincerely interested in hearing the narrative and being part of seeing it unfold. Again, the question being, for a given client, what is useful? What is meaningful? What works? Useful helpers in positive psychology demonstrate skills and competence, and they foster these in clients. They also foster respect for the narrative and the insights of the client, for their themes. They demonstrate a capacity for empathy, patience, and enthusiasm. They make positive use of time. They're available and accessible. They're flexible, and they make a shift from these problem-solving words and narratives to guiding a client in terms of concrete behavioral action that will help the client get closer to his or her values and beliefs. And finally, the helper who believes in positive psychology focuses on boundaries. So let's look at how do we get there. What are the things that we do that make a difference to our clients? Well, just listening, giving the clients the time of day. How will they know that we've really listened? Well, they know that we care because we're able to reflect back in a way that they can say, yeah, you do get what I'm saying. We might ask questions to clarify. After some foundation has been built in terms of the therapeutic alliance, we may question, challenge, or help resolve some things that seem open-ended. Another thing that's really cool with the positive psychology approach is that we foster with our clients what's called choice making. I like to teach the clients some red flags to watch out for. And one of them is the language of have to. Have to is trapping because it shows us there's only one right linear way. Instead of, oh, I have choices. There are options. Perhaps one of the top things my clients have told me has made a difference is this idea of reframing things in terms of choices and allowing clients to cultivate new ways of thinking and relating to others. It helps them be more future-minded. So maybe it is true that they've had a rough past. Maybe they felt like certain things in life were determined for them. Maybe their family of origin wasn't what they would have liked. Maybe they lacked some choices at certain times. But now we can actually explore with a client via positive psychology and solution-focused approaches or acceptance and commitment therapy, the idea of focusing on the future, that our past was just a bridge to the present, and we can be mindful. Towards this idea, Brewer says, we can help a client to see the ordinary in an extraordinary light. So therapy becomes a collaborative learning experience. Therapy can either be convergent or divergent. The typical medical model would be convergent, looking at problem solving, evaluating, deciding, and implementing. Whereas when we're teaching someone to be a third-party observer in their life, this is more of a divergent approach. It helps our clients have more insight. It helps them to develop a sense of awe and wonder, of inquiry, of looking at options and reflecting on things. So there are some questions and considerations that we can do with clients to be supportive. Essentially, we're helping them look at narratives in context. We're helping them ask themselves, did I really act wisely? Did I act well? When we're saying well is in line with the values. What was my motivation? Were there any feelings? What could be improved? What do I need to do to make the situation better in the future? And what have I learned? The answer here really is that of resilience. There's a set of human strengths that are most likely buffers against mental illness, including things like courage, optimism, interpersonal skills, work ethic, honesty, and perseverance. So one of the things we can help our clients with is learning to promote resiliency. The literature would suggest that cognitive flexibility, considering options of ways to approach things, really can make a difference. Self-control and learning emotional regulation can also help towards that. And other focus, looking outside of ourself and what seems to be limited. When clients initially come to us, they're so hyper-focused on their presenting problem concerns. A lot of times, clients may even do what's called the fundamental attribution error. They may look at flaws as characterological in others, but only contextual in me. They may look at strengths as characterological in me, but contextual in others. Can resilience actually be learned? Well, positive psychology and strengths-based focus would actually suggest that it could be learned. It's not about what dispositions we were innately born with. We can teach many skills to clients. What skills could we impact? Well, one of the big ones that you might think of when you think of things like DBT are things like emotional awareness and regulation and impulse control. We can discuss things like optimism. We can test out a client's causal analysis that if I do A, B, and C, 1, 2, and 3 will result. That maybe life is not just that linear. That it's not just because of me, but sometimes even in spite of me, that life has mercy on me, that other chances and options are given. We can empathize and better understand how a client got to this point. We can help build self-efficacy and reach out to the clients. So we're attacking basically these three different areas of resilience. We're helping to build cognitive or thought-based ways of reconceptualizing things. We're helping build healthy emotional ways of conceptualizing. And we're helping follow up with useful behaviors. The literature would suggest more than education, more than experience in life, more than training, a person's resilience will determine who succeeds and who fails. So there are some qualities that resilient people tend to have. Instead of pushing so hard at fighting realities of stresses that have happened to them, even in the face of sometimes some pretty traumatic things, resilient people learn to accept reality. They allow it to just pass through. It's not that resilient people don't have strong opinions. In fact, they may have some pretty strongly held values, but they're able to really look at their own operational definitions of those values and pursue things that are congruent with what their values are inside them. They realize that while life has its twist and turn, and many things don't always turn out the way I hope they would, that life as a whole generally is meaningful. So when we're talking about positive psychology, we're not talking about an overly rosy Pollyanna approach of, oh, life is so good and that there's denial. But we're having what's called optimism without distortion. There's a sense of hope, which one of the key roles of things we can do as a clinician is helping to instill hope in our clients. Resiliency helps clients realize that they can deal with what's set before them. They may have skills, but may not have used them enough. They may need to do some skill building. That's possible. I always tell clients everything's modifiable. Things can be learned. How we apply them, how we use them, may just need to be changed a little bit. People can develop cognitive flexibility. And our clients can learn how to balance between expressing too much emotion. You know, it's not all just about catharsis. And between hiding emotion or concealing emotion. So they can learn what's most beneficial. Again, there's that phrase, useful. What works? So there's three parts or components of resilience. Comprehensibility, manageability, and meaningfulness. Comprehensibility is basically what we call meaning making, trying to sort through and find out what would make sense of things even in spite of adversity. Manageability, the sense that when I first came to counseling, I didn't really think I knew how to deal with certain issues. But now I realize that I have increased knowledge about the resources that are out there. Now I realize I've learned some skills. Maybe one of the best things we do towards this goal, for example, is highlighting the cooperative nature of the therapeutic venture. For example, what I do is I really highlight homework. I give clients, after they have learned some skills and we've role-played or demonstrated them in session, I give them the ability to practice at home, to see that tasks are more manageable. Resiliency can't be built without there being challenges someone has to go through. So in doing so, in giving opportunities for our clients to practice, they learn a sense of meaningfulness. There is some value behind even things that might feel unpleasant. We can even move beyond resiliency, which is more getting back to the state of homeostasis, of evenness, of like a plateau. And we can move beyond to the place of thriving, actually doing better than initial. There can be enhanced potentials for recovery. There can be a cumulative higher functioning. Skills, like I said, can be learned and developed. Just because someone's an adult, we shouldn't assume they have life skills. Therapy might be a setting where we can highlight and affirm those skills. We can help them work towards psychological mastery. We can help them with interpersonal situations. Now let me explain one of the modalities of treatment that does this. We have this type of treatment called acceptance and commitment therapy, which is abbreviated ACT, A-C-T. I'm going to read a little quote here that the literature suggested. Excuse me. The quote says, "Detaching people from their minds is one of the main aims of ACT. But it's much easier said than done. The problem is when we're not trained to discriminate when the mind is useful and when it's not. Minds are far less useful in learning to be present, learning to love, or discovering how best to carry the complexities of a personal history. The goal of ACT is promoting a more workable life." I like that phrase, useful and workable, because again, we're not saying it has to be ideal, that we have to, as in the medical model, be a statistical part of what is considered the common, largely accepted way of doing things. It just has to be workable for us. It's like when our clients try to use that phrase of what's right or what's wrong. They try to use all or nothing thinking. I always add that phrase at the end. What's right for you? What's right in this context? What's right in light of your life experiences? So we're helping them develop SMART goals. SMART is an acronym. SMART, the S means specific. We can't achieve goals. They can't be realistic. And they definitely then can't be useful or meaningful if they're not specific. M, they need to be measurable. What would we actually see? I use this idea of a camera check. If there was an imaginary video camera there, what behaviors would be seen? If I act in line with the values, if I'm doing things that move me away from the unpleasant things like mood dysregulation, addiction, or mental illness, what would be moving me towards more of my desired committed action? And then the A in SMART stands for achievable. We need to make sure that the goals that the client's thinking of are things that he or she actually could do. Have they demonstrated the skills towards it in the past? Can they just do them to a greater degree? Are they able to learn certain things to build on what they already know? R, is it relevant? How does it fit in with the current narrative of that person's life? And then finally, the T is timed. You could have the right goal, but an off timing. So we want to support clients in finding the timing for implementing certain goals and new behaviors that are useful. So SMART, again, is specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and timed. The meaning and the context of things is really what we're looking at. We really want to hear things like tone of voice. We really want to look at the nonverbals and how a client uses a word to define a meaning. So there might be strong meanings behind certain things. And that's something we can work with in our sessions. For example, I've had one lady recently who has heightened anxiety. And instead of trying to use a traditional medical model just to focus on the problematic anxiety, I came to find out through her sessions, when she would talk about work stress, she would talk about the stress of meetings at work. And I kept hearing this theme over and over. Meetings. Meetings are unpleasant. Meetings are negative. Meetings are uncomfortable. So I brought it to her attention. I said, it seems like the idea of meetings holds some kind of value for you. I don't tend to hear anything positive behind the idea of meetings. When you think of meetings, what do you tell yourself about meetings? And then we started looking at her thoughts behind that. Her interpretations of the context was, meetings mean judgment. Meetings mean other people's eyes are on me. Meetings mean there's some kind of outcomes desired, and people may or may not think I fit in within those. So it's actually positive to assist our clients in recreating more neutral or useful meanings of things. We can help them to vary their responses based on the context, to develop that psychological or cognitive flexibility. We can help them see experiences in the here and now. We can help them base their choices and decisions on values. So the whole point of acceptance and commitment therapy is that it's a contextual approach. There's a relational frame to this approach. Events exist in a context. That context gives meaning to the situation. So we can define or redefine things using what I said, the camera check method earlier. What would the camera see in terms of concrete, observable behaviors? And that goals, if we want them to be successful, need to be specific. What would I want the camera to see instead? And how can I get there? So basically, we're highlighting with the client, it's less about what's, quote, right according to someone outside, but it's more about what's true and what works. There's a word literature talks about. The word is called pliance. P-L-I-A-N-C-E. This means, what do words mean over time? So they use an example in the literature, talking about a cat, for example. If I say the word cat, over time, I've learned through the years to figure out what a cat is by learning things that tend to get paired with the word cat. Oh, a cat's a type of pet. It's a furry animal. It has whiskers. But what if the context or the meaning over time changed? I could even change what a cat meant. So we can make a difference by really using the client's metaphors. Using the client's language can actually help them to be open to change. Therapy is about co-constructing useful narratives. It's about helping the client see what is important or valued by them, and whether or not what they're saying their values are gets them closer to what they want or need. Or are there barriers to getting values? I found that I've had a lot of success recently here with angry people, with people calling in wanting stress management or anger management, when instead of defining them as an angry person, a fighting person, an argumentative person, that I said, oh, you just want life to be fair. Their guard has really gone down. Their defenses really have gone down. They're like, yeah, I just want to be respected for what I have to offer. Yeah. How do people choose metaphor? Well, first, the target of the metaphor must be something that has an important function for that client. Second, the source of the metaphor must correspond to the key features of the target so that the client can recognize their own experience with the metaphor. And lastly, the source has to contain a property that is clearer or more salient than the target, helping the client see the features of the target more clearly. So it's all about what we pair things with. Take, for example, young kids. Let's say they use the word stupid. Oh, that's stupid. One kid in class may say, oh, you said a bad word. You called it stupid. The other kid might say, oh, that's just stupid, and may think nothing of it. Why? Because for one, the word stupid was repeatedly paired up with correction, reprimand, or an idea that this is just not something we say or do. Whereas for that second one, it might be, oh, stupid's a word I can use instead of a cuss word or instead of something else. One of the ways that clients can improve through this positive approach is looking at how they did manage, how they have worked through things so far. And again, with the idea of being a third-party observer, we can encourage them to look at what they noticed or observed. When I have clients, for example, with anxiety, they tend to focus on the helpless feelings that they have when the wave of anxiety or panic comes on them. They just feel like they cannot handle it. But when I make a comment like, change is difficult for you, they say, oh boy, yeah. And if we're talking about, say, a middle-aged adult, a new way of conceptualizing that might be to say, I wonder how you've managed change, other changes. Maybe not this change. Maybe not this example you're telling me about. But wow, you're in your 50s. I imagine there's some kind of changes you went through. You had to juggle college and work. You had to go through losses in life. You had to go through these certain things. So life's changed. Life's thrown things at you already that you didn't always expect. You have dealt with change. Now you hear how that narrative moves a client away from the problem-focused medical model towards, you did something. It reminds the client you have become resilient over time. You're just not giving yourself enough credit. Maybe you're not having enough mercy on yourself. How can you acknowledge what you've done? And it's interesting having clients actually learn to collect evidence of things they've done well. They could learn about character strengths they have, things like creativity, that when they were faced with options of things, they came up with new and exciting ways of developing solutions. They might have had curiosity. They might have learned to have awe and wonder about a situation that before they wouldn't have even approached. So there's a lot of character strengths that a lot of times clients don't give themselves enough credit for. And sometimes with the positive approach, if we can complement and bring that to the surface, it can be something that is highlighted. Things like them being open-minded, loving to learn, having a sense of perspective, being brave or persistent. There can be other things like them just being kind, loving, wanting to reach out and help people. Things like teamwork or fairness. Values and character strengths like forgiveness and mercy. Humility, wisdom, self-regulation, appreciation of beauty and excellence, gratitude and hope and optimism. Sense of humor or spirituality. So there's literature that talks about how can we discover the client's strengths? How can they discover those and give themselves credit for it? So some of the things that we might do is help almost like a complete the sentence exercise with clients. Things like, I am good at. What are some things that client is good at? Because a lot of times, again, when they're coming into us, they're so hyper-focused on the problem narrative. What if a client were able to give him or herself some credit for, I am good at thinking of new or better ways of doing things? There's a value of creativity. There's a strength. What about things like I love to explore and ask questions? I'm curious. That way, I could even say to a client, wow, you've not lost that sense of awe and wonder. Even though you're telling me you feel hurt or trapped, there's part of you that deep down still wants to be able to explore and ask questions and figure things out. That's fascinating to me. Or strengths like I am flexible and open-minded. I think through and examine all sides of things before deciding. I love new ideas, concepts, or facts in school. People say I'm wise beyond my age. You see how everybody to some degree has strengths, but oftentimes our clients don't come in just naturally being aware of them, highlighting them, and appreciating them. We can highlight with a client when they don't give up, even in the face of hardship. Again, that sense of resilience. I've told clients when they talk about anxiety, I said, you know what? But one thing I see is that you're a person that even though you felt afraid, sometimes you've done things while afraid. There's people who have a hard time doing things when not afraid. But you've done the things that you feel are useful and needful and helpful when you're afraid. Wow, what a gift. Again, a very different sense of perspective for that client. I don't give up, even in the sense of when there's hardships. I finish things. I see that myself through them. I'm genuine, I'm honest, I'm trustworthy. I'm energetic and full of life. They might have values of love and kindness, of being having like a servant's heart, of being other-focused. So, for example, this is something I might even use, say, with a codependent client. A lot of times codependent clients may struggle about the difference between caring for someone and caring about someone. So, in order to work with a client, before we change the codependent core message, I could say something like, wow, it sounds so important to you to have the value of making a difference in people's lives. You like to be kind. You like to see the possibilities that could happen if someone's given to or someone's affirmed. Other strengths you can highlight with clients are their teamwork, their team membership, and the ways they contribute to the success of a group, or ways that they do things like standing up for others when there's issues like unfairness or being bullied or ridiculed, or leadership issues, forgiveness, being cautious. There's another one. There, I find, is almost always something that we can validate in our clients. Let's take a borderline client that may have some difficulties with trust, where it's a love-hate relationship with people in their life. I could even validate the idea with that person that they're cautious, and the idea that there's some value in having some cautiousness when you've been burned before. When there are some things that don't always work out a certain way. There's other strengths we can affirm in our clients, like thankfulness, gratitude, being funny, having a sense of spirituality. There's a number of things. Now, I want to talk to some of the literature on some of these specific types of attributes that can be cultivated. Because I actually am pulling from the literature about things that the literature would suggest that clients can build up. One of the things we repeatedly hear about in the literature is cultivating gratitude. I've had clients, let's say, that are depressed, stressed out, angry, dysthymic, just having difficulty finding something good or happy or joyful in life. And one of the things that has been able to over time be cultivated with them is the concept of gratitude. How we do this is something like using a gratitude journal, helping them notice, again, attend to, be mindful about, increase awareness of what they can be thankful for. Training themselves that it doesn't have to be that they automatically are hyper-focused on the negatives. That in the environment, there are so many things, even in the given therapy room, that we can choose to focus between. What an interesting concept to put a seed in our client's mind. I can choose my focus. So attribution retraining, training ourselves to pay attention to the positives instead of the negatives. Then even the thing, which is in line with the strengths-based solution-focused approach of therapy, of finding out what has worked well, appreciation and heartfelt thanks. Another area that the literature talks about that is positive that we can focus on is that area of curiosity. To me, I've had clients that I've said, wow, even in the midst of feeling like it wasn't affirmed by your family or your background about having a sense of awe and wonder, you have enough self-respect that you're saying, you know what, deep down, I think it's something cool about exploring things, about questioning things, about wanting to know why I think what I think, about getting information, about looking for the rare and unusual and questioning things. That's a value. And then we can look at how does the client want to continue to cultivate that? What about attributes like kindness, giving, generosity, and other orientation? We could teach, for example, a codependent person about how to be kind and how to care within boundaries. We can help him or her reconceptualize the value. So instead of saying, oh, you don't need to care like that, you're going overboard, it's a problem, we could say, wow, you really care. You really care. I might say to a codependent person who has tears in their eyes in session, I might say, those tears are telling a story. You value giving to people. You feel safest when giving. You value making a difference in people's lives. How could we continue to facilitate this value, but in a way that we could add you to the list of people that you value? So you see, it's a different way than confronting or reprimanding the client. It's not quite so directly negative sounding. What about values like love of learning? I try to affirm with clients, even when they feel like they lack certain skills or experiences, that if they're willing to try things out to gain new skills, even to take a risk to practice or role play certain dynamics in the counseling session to learn, for example, communication skills, techniques, or other things, that loving to learn and grow is a real positive quality. Another attribute that we could highlight and affirm is that of humility, allowing their actions to speak for themselves. I tend to highlight with clients the fact that people will look at what you're doing and that will show them what to think about you even more than what you say. So letting your actions speak for yourself. We can help clients cultivate values like courage and bravery. That it's not necessarily the number or the intensity of traumas and stresses in life, but perseverance even in the face of risk. We can validate and acknowledge the stress of dealing with risk, of even facing situations when someone is scared. Another value that we might want to highlight with a client is that of integrity. I look at integrity as being consistency across situations. So when I'm at home in my room and no one else is around, do I still show certain values? when I'm in the workplace, when people are watching, or if they're not watching? Do people still say, oh, I know that's how Michelle is? Have I demonstrated myself as genuine? Persistence and perseverance are also skills and dimensions of resilience and positive optimism that we can highlight with clients. Someone who finishes what they start, who strives to continue to go on even through difficulties, that's a positive attribute. Or someone who identifies with humanity, interpersonal strengths, kindness, nurturance, compassion, altruism, or love. What about someone who's ultra perceptive? Maybe someone who has social intelligence, who's able to pick up on what makes a difference to others around them. Someone who's creative, who has different ways of looking at things. They may take areas where they don't have resources, maybe financially, but make use of other talents. I remember, for example, a few times I went to Africa on missions trips, and the places that I went, I was highly impressed at how, in the sense of community, people pulled together when they didn't have certain resources. They might be struggling to have rice or bread or eggs just to eat something for themselves or their family. But they were able to work with their hands. They were able to do each other's hair. They were able to help in other ways. And it was fascinating to see the ingenuity, the originality, and just the creativity. Even when you have a client for, say, you know, that says they have anger management issues, they may talk about the sense of unfairness or injustice, prejudices, or feeling like discrimination has occurred. We can highlight the fact that they want things to be fair. They want things to be equal. They don't want to feel shut out. And I remember one gentleman who just went from job to job to job. And he talked about never feeling heard by the supervisors on his jobs. So I was able to highlight with him this value of justice and look at, okay, is there a way we could talk or present ourselves that would convey that you have something meaningful to share as much as the next person? Other things that can be highlighted in a forum with a client are things like good judgment, sense of perspective, enthusiasm, approaching things in life with interest, intimacy, value on closeness, value on connection. I've had a number of case examples where someone has felt like they've had counterfeit intimacy. Maybe they don't know how to effectively communicate with someone. Maybe they're arguing. Maybe they're trading substitutes, whether it be addictions or other things, for genuine intimacy. So for me to be able to say something like, all these attempts that you are making sounds like deep down one of your values is having a proactive search for closeness. Social abilities are also strengths, leadership abilities, and things like self-control. Appreciation, learning to find beauty, which this is closely tied to gratitude and small things. Spirituality, the literature also would suggest that people who have values in some things beyond themselves, in higher power, in a sense of organized religion, or even just spirituality without the rigid religious rituals, really can make a difference. That there are coping functions that religion helps. It helps people find meaning in the face of suffering. It helps them sort through things. It helps them achieve mastery and control or feel like there's a forward moving direction in life. There's a purpose, whether I understand it now or even ever understand it, that there is a bigger context. It helps provide comfort and reduce apprehension. Oftentimes, religious coping functions also help to focus on a sense of community, and it helps people look at what genuinely is significant for them. When we return in the next section, we're going to dive into one of the important values that the literature repeatedly talks about in connection to resilience. So it could really, really build optimism and build on the things we talked about so far on positive psychology, values, and committed action. And that's hope. Instilling hope is one of the most important things that we can do as therapists. That there is something beyond the problem-focused narrative of the medical model. Again, just to summarize what we talked about in this first portion, the medical model is not the only approach to working with our clients. We don't have to just put them in a box, use diagnostic labels, and have a problem focus, looking at statistically how much they might deviate from norms. There's an alternative that addresses and values the individualized meaning and narrative of each client. It beckons the client to have an active participation in his or her life. It fosters acceptance, even in the times of frustration, an ability to allow the stresses and angst of life just to pass through, just to observe. Okay, we don't have to break it down. We don't have to analyze it. We don't have to pick it apart. We can have present moment awareness and look at our values and then towards that foster committed action. We can listen to clients' historical narratives, what led them to this point, but help realize that they wouldn't be coming into counseling, at least voluntarily, if there wasn't a part of them that didn't want growth. That there's an assumption behind this positive psychology that people do want to grow, that self-actualization is the goal, that they're learning about facilitating what is useful, what is valuable for them, that we're moving away from a psychology of failure to a psychology of success, that we're developing dialogues about being problem-free. We can use strengths-based approaches like the miracle question. We can help build resilience and the idea that every person that comes to us matters and that their ideas on disease and wellness are important to us. That it is possible to foster a positive optimism. Just like the literature decades ago focused on learned helplessness, we can focus on learned optimism. This would include flexibility, consideration of various options, self-control, and realizing that there's many ways of doing things. That we can help people, help our clients, both cognitively, emotionally, and behaviorally, foster resilience. We can hear their values. We can foster balanced optimism without distortion and hope. We can help them develop smart goals, goals that are specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and timely. And we can use the very metaphors and language a client does to see the meaning and the context that the client's using. That relational frame is key. That it's less about who's right, but what's true and what works. And if there are things that have been problematic, helping clients to consider new ways of pairing up words with meaning and context so that idea appliance. And then finally, we can help use a strengths-based, solution-focused approach to finding out a whole host of strengths that a client already has. We can do this by even asking questions like, how did you manage in spite of this? Tell me about the values you have. Tell me about how this is important to you. So we can, again, look at it in terms of their narrative and a positive approach. When we return here shortly, we'll look at, again, this concept of hope and the attributes that make up hope and how we can help foster that in terms of a more positive outlook with our clients.